Hello, and welcome to Educational Triage, where we discuss issues in alternative education. This is a discussion about teaching by teachers, for teachers, and others who are interested in the alternative education world. We hope you find today's episode relevant, engaging, and useful. And if you do, please subscribe. I'm Tony Hunt, and I'm here to help guide you with the help of my friends Christy and Philip. Hello, everybody. We are back, and today we are discussing the implementation of computer platforms as an alternative learning method, whether or not they are viable or how they could best be used. And once again, I am joined by the indomitable Christy Goodell and the brilliant Philip Summers. And so, to start off with, I'm going to toss over to you, Philip, and I'm sure that you hear my beautiful autumn in the background. Because, Philip, you worked with computer platform learning and online learning for a while. And so my question to you is, do you believe that it is actually a viable method of learning for the students, and if so, why, and if not, what are the weaknesses or the strengths?
I think it's adequate at best and only as a supplement, maybe a credit recovery supplement or a access, an environment access for someone who has a 504 that keeps them from going to a larger classroom environment or something like that, or keeps them at home. During the pandemic, I could see some of the usefulness of it. But then to implement some of the things that we were using, I looked at three programs. The one that we used the most, you had to be kind of counterintuitive. It was a little bit counterintuitive, but you also had to be kind of hands-on to teach them how to use it. Once they got it, they could go with it. So it wasn't pandemic friendly, but it, as I said, it wasn't real involved either. It's pretty pat. It's lecture on film, little tests. There's proficiency based stuff along the way to make sure you're not going over information that you've already mastered, quote unquote. But sometimes that's where you learn and relearn stuff. So
yeah. So what define adequate?
Adequate means that it's not real involved learning. It's going to hold in your mind just about as long as it takes for you to pass the tests. It's that thing that we all do to get to the next quarter, to get the next credit. It doesn't teach you very much at all.
Okay. That's that was one of my concerns, is that it's passive learning. And that's
very, very passive.
And that's something that I have been saying for quite some time, and we have these, let's call them administrative types, who who balk at this, and they say, well, I see it more as a punishment when students have to do it for the majority of the time. Christy,
yep,
with special ed and the computer type learning, what are you finding?
So there are definitely some positives in that, like, if you are needing to get to access curriculum during off hours, it's always there, right? Mm-hmm. And in my mind, there's like what we call the CAN curriculum. So the big businesses create these huge curriculum sets that cover like all of health 1 and 2 or that kind of stuff. And then there's the online stuff that teachers did, where they were putting up their own work for their class. And so more of the classwork, I'll use our class, for example, we would videotape ourselves giving the instruction during virtual, and then we would take PDFs of our notes and then upload those. So if the kid was absent or they forgot, then they couldn't do the, I don't know what it is, right? We're like, it's there, you can access it. Mm-hmm. But we know it's to their level. But those big CAN curriculum ones, you have to be reading at grade level. You have to be a very strong, independent self-learner to be able to access all the information. And then if you have any sort of questions or anything that's kind of going a little bit off tangent, I feel very hard to get solutions. So if you read below grade level, like if you have a specific learning disability, if you have ADHD, it's extremely difficult to sit for a long period of time and just read and then be able to not only read, but comprehend what you're reading enough to
window toggling.
Too. Yeah. So that is not very good for many of our students. Yeah. If you have any sort of, aside from like the vision piece, like that's, if you have any sort of vision impairment, that's extremely difficult, and not a lot of programs are going to let you adjust the background color or the font or the pictures, right? Because it's right. Just like, you just read it as it is. So it just targets. So this long-winded answer is basically that for students who are on 504s or in special education, it only serves a very small niche for those students. It's very challenging for the rest of them.
Perfect. These are great responses. My concern is that, one, it's passive, and mm-hmm. two, for some kids, it works really, really well. They love it, and I don't want to take that away from them. But when you have programs and districts that are saying, hey, this is it, and I...
Your dog is cracking me up.
Well, she's a bit of a Camille.
What's her opinion? She sounds like she has an opinion.
Oh, she does. It's kind of like, stop paying attention to them. I'm trying to get back on my train of thought. It's a lot of the kids will not do it. They can't do it, and it's very difficult. And I'm not sure how it's being done with any amount of success with a lot of programs where there are students who have the ADHD in an alternative setting where students really need to be able to focus on what they're doing and try to learn something. And I don't think that the learning is as vibrant and rich as it could be if they were doing something that had more self-exploratory, something where they were actually given assignments that they actually had to complete. I'll give a case in point where a student was asked to write a paper. And so he and I sat down because he said, how do I do this? And we were going over it. And I said, well, let's use some of this for your paper so that you have a quotation and let's work on that. So he wrote about half of it and he accidentally hit the submit button. And he had maybe about two paragraphs plus the quotation. And the program gave him a 90%.
Oh.
And he said, oh, can I take this grade? And, you know, I was really hard pressed to right? not say, sure, let's move on.
Yeah.
Because we'd already done some oral learning and he already had it and we had discussed it and this was a long ways for him. But by the same token, how do you have an algorithm that's going to be able to actually do something like that? I mean, I kind of feel like HAL 2000 is going to teach our kids and they're going to trap them and they're going to do something.
Well, something that has discretion. You know, I, for example, had a writing packet that I would give kids that would help them put together a writing assignment, a persuasive paper, the five paragraph persuasive paper in pieces. And it was a folder they kept together and it came, you know, a little chapter by chapter. It wasn't very large, but I made them keep it neat and keep it intact and keep it collected and keep it someplace safe. And that was part of the assignment too. And that's organization, and that's a skill that will make life much easier. And it did for those that really learned it quickly. And for those that didn't, when they finally got it, of course, that was almost as good, if not better, than writing the paper itself, because they learned that they could organize these things.
Right.
And you can't do that on a screen. to me, I was looking at these courses and sort of seeing which ones we wanted to use. And I was looking at trying to get it over with quick and move on to the next thing. And I have ADD, so
right.
I kind of see these kids going, hey, let's just move on, or toggle screens, or listen to that song and come back and not really remember, and that sort of thing. So yikes. Yeah.
Yeah. There are, and that's kind of like what worked for a lot of, when I was helping kids with like credit recovery or like homebound tutoring stuff. So they would work on it on their own online, but then you had that follow through, like we would meet once a week and then kind of be able to parse out what they know. So they are having that interactive component, and you know, that's, you know, a hybrid, which is now kind of a harsh word for a lot of our online teachers, right? It's like PTSD, but I, you know, those are kind of, because again, they're getting that instruction, and then you can kind of take those tangents. Hey, I can see that you don't understand this concept. Let's kind of keep going on it. Whereas like, if you just click a bunch of buttons, you might be able to get through it faster. For some students that were on an IEP, the ability to stop and start on their own time schedule was very beneficial, as opposed to I have to sit in a room for 90 plus minutes and I click out after 20 and then I just get punished, or I lose track, or now I'm a disturbance to the class, da 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 da. So just being able to access it in little chunks for a lot of kids during virtual learning worked out great. Or they could walk around while they were listening to the teacher because they were muted.
Great
and
point.
Their screen was off, and yeah. I could fidget and get my movement breaks and that kind of stuff. And that worked really well for them. And mm-hmm. then on the flip side, and I'm also thinking of my children, the having the ADHD part where like I need the physical environment to help keep me focused. I need the buildings and the teachers and that, like that location helps keep me focused. That's where my work is. And then my home life is where I'm comfy and I don't focus. And when those worlds blend, it's extremely difficult for a lot.
That's true too.
Of people. Yeah. So like the physical environment of online learning doesn't always promote the learning.
Well, I think, you know, back in the old days, pre-COVID, they used to tell us, do not take your work into your bedroom. Keep things separate. Keep your rooms all separate. Don't merge them.
And don't you work on your bed because your brain's like sleepy time. Yeah.
Right. Otherwise, you're going to confuse the environment in your brain.
Yep.
And during COVID, though, it became necessary for a great number of people to work in from their bedrooms. It was maybe the only private place that they had.
Yep.
Some people had to resort to a bathroom. There were so many different things that happened. And it was, you know, I think that it harmed many people's circadian rhythms.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that there are one thing that Philip brought up when I first asked him was that it's supplemental.
Yeah.
I think using the computer supplementally, but then when you were talking, Christy, I was thinking of the concept of flipped learning and how beneficial that is if people can do flipped learning and they are able to keep that. And so the kids are able to log in and renew their concepts and those and that learning and do all of that. So that's a more active approach, whereas otherwise you're just learning. I'm just babbling, I think, where instead of just listening to somebody speak to you and lecture to you, and then you take a quiz or two and then you move on. Either you know it or you don't, and then you just, it just goes out into the ether.
Right. It's just like burn and churn through the, and we've done that. Like, hey, you've got 5 days to get through this many chapters and we just need you to get there. Right. Cause otherwise you don't graduate and you know, the kids aren't learning. Right. But you're just like, let's go. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not real. You're not learning. You're just jumping through a hoop to get to that next stage. So you can get to the stage to graduate. Right.
It, yeah. And what really got me was that I cannot find any longitudinal studies over the efficacy of any of these computer platforms.
Right.
And how well they do. Now, there is one that was done by what I'm going to assume a lobby group for the computer platforms.
Yeah.
That is a several page sort of, shall we say, pamphlet in that's pro, but there's nothing that really states anything that gives us an idea of, one, what are the positives and what are the negatives. Now, one thing that I did find a study, and it has to do with a sense of belonging at school. And computers tend to, so let's think about this a little bit. Computers apparently tend to segregate kids. They isolate the kids from other people. And so if they're doing computerized learning, there's no sense of collaboration. There's no sense of community right. and unity. And so if we put them into there, sure, they might be able to talk to each other about whatever, but there's no sense that they can collaborate and work on a project together, that somebody can edit my paper for me, or that we can discuss ideas.
So, the social aspect, for sure.
Oh, big time. And all of these things are really important for not only students, but also for adults and everybody in a community to be able to socialize, to network, and have that sense of belonging. So I'm going to throw that out to both of you about, what do you think would be a good recipe to use these and still maintain that sense of belonging, or do you believe that maybe there should be another type of platform that might merge active teaching and the platform itself in order to engage students and help them?
I worked in a program, online program, for 3 years, 2.5 years. Anyway, there was always a struggle to try to get that connection with the kids. They tried everything. They tried to require them to come in. They tried to have them come in and participate in things and give them credit for it. They didn't go far enough with that. There's the other models where there's like in-session days and then online days.
Right.
That would have been better. Mm-hmm. They tried to build the community, in my opinion. They didn't get it involved enough, but it was really difficult to do. Most of the kids taking that online curriculum just wanted to do it and get the heck out of Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
They were done with everything, and they wanted to do it their way. And there were some kids that had some problems just socializing with other kids, and that going into a group really created a lot of phobia for them, and they thought that being online was a godsend as well. So there was some kind of issues too. So there was a lot of obstacles, I would say, by its very nature, too many to make it really a community-based curriculum.
If you were able to do that with a very small group of maybe 4 to 5 in a cohort, would that have worked better for many of those that had the anxiety?
Absolutely. Then I could do it. Yeah. Then it would be easily done. You know, it would take some time. It would take a lot of patience, but then it could be done. But that's also true. There was a big room. You were talking like 25 kids, mm-hmm. maybe 22. And so you break them into 4 groups. You're still talking, you know, 5, 6, or 7 kids a group. So that's a big group. That was big enough. And it was a wide open room. So that might have created some things for the kids. Mm-hmm. But it was homey. It's just these kids did not want to mess with other kids, period. They didn't want to even, you know, like, what's your favorite color? It wasn't anything they wanted to fess up to. And I don't blame them in a way, because they were there to get their credits and get out of Dodge, honestly. And for them to come up with these community games, I thought was sort of coercing them into being community. It was very contrived in a way. And they kind of saw through that. So unless it involves them in another thing, unless you give them credit mm-hmm. for their involvement in it, don't ask them to do it, I would say. Make it worth their time and give them credit. don't say, okay, we're going to take 15 minutes of your time away from the computer and we're not giving you any credit for that, because they're there for the credit.
Right. And so there's no impetus for them to actually care.
Yeah. They there's nothing for them to get rewarded by, except they don't want to be part of that community. They want the credit. So, yeah.
Okay. So my program, we have so many students that are working on so many different elements, so many different classes. And I work in a district where they have determined that this is the only way that they should be able to learn, through passive. And we have tons of students who have absolutely, is that your dog?
That is my dog. Not my dog. She's laying on this bed behind me. And so now she's like, oh, now it's my turn. She honks like a little swan when she wants some attention. And she's a 75-pound huge lab, so it's sort of
fun. I thought it was your stomach.
It was fascinating because the mainstream, they were given a completely different computer platform, and they were told that they could vary, they could do whatever they want, if they wanted to teach live, if they wanted to use that, however they wanted to intermix, etc. They were allowed to. And then suppose I heard this through the grapevine, and nobody's actually confirmed it because I haven't seen anything in writing yet, that the alternative programs were told that they could only use this one platform, a different platform. They were not to deviate away from it, no matter what. And so all of the alternative students were kind of stuck. And to me, that's antithetical, and it goes against the very laws of alternative education.
Right.
And it has more to do with expediency. It has more to do with a lack of understanding and a lack of caring. And basically, it makes me very angry, because to me, they might as well, and I'm just going to give you the graphic, you can finish it. They just want to bend the kids over.
It's just plain old prejudice and discrimination.
Thank you.
They prejudged these kids to be some and said, here's how we're going to treat them. And that's how you treat kids like that.
Right. And so it's a punishment in a sense, because they treat our students as though they are less than, or they're punishing them because you didn't do it the first time. So guess what we're going to do to you now? And you darn well better get it this way otherwise. And they think that the kids are going to be grateful for it.
Well, it doesn't make sense that you're going to make something less engaging for a student that already is struggling and is looking for a different path. So why would, so you're setting them up for failure.
Well, they don't see the irony of it, which explains why they're in their positions, because I'll have to tell you, I have known more people with PhDs who have the brains of somebody in their first year of their BA. They really, a case in point, a friend of mine and I were talking, and I just wanted his take because I was working with somebody who I thought was, I was really surprised at their lack of knowledge and skill. And I said, why don't you go over there and talk to this person for a little bit? I'm kind of curious about what you think. And he came back and he looked at me and he said, you know, they would be so interesting if they went to college. They should take some courses in college and they would go far. And I said, they have a master's degree. And he stopped and he looked at me and he said, that has a master's degree? And I said, yes. And he said, oh my God, the state of education. And I don't want that for my students. I want my students to be able to explore and express and not have something that's thrown at them where they have to sit and gawk. I mean, we don't want kids staring at the television.
Well, I think we've simply missed the point. They're looking at the finite game versus the infinite game. The finite game says that there are rules and there are time limits and there are players. And you go to college, and at the end of it, each quarter, you get your grade. And in the next quarter, you take your next set of classes, and you get your grades. And you go to the end of it, and when you're done with it, ta-da, you get your degree. And there's a finite game. And everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And there's the infinite game. It never ends. Players come in and players leave. Mm-hmm. Circumstances always change. It's very flexible. It's played all the time. There's never any rules. It's innovative. It's life. It's the way to be. It's what learning should be. When you learn something, you should learn it in the infinite game to be useful knowledge along the path of life. True, life ends like the finite game, but you don't know when. So technically, we're playing an infinite game. They're playing a finite game. They're racking up numbers or college credits.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They don't understand. They're not seeing the forest for the trees. They don't understand the essence of learning and knowledge. And yet they're at the on the bridge of it. They don't understand it.
Well, there are some people who are very mechanical, and they're very good at receiving knowledge mechanically and putting it down and receiving it.
Utilize it, though, yeah.
Exactly. And so the knowledge is just there. I mean, it's like this heap of stuff. And the learner that we want to create is the one who has this beautiful garden and this beautiful home that's decorated with all kinds of treasures that they have around them. And
the hubcap, the blue paint on the one wall, you know, that place.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they collected, that's an odd looking statue, but I kind of like it. Yeah.
Well, there's a house that we walk by periodically, and yeah. I call it the Woodland House because it's in a neighborhood and it is overgrown. Mm-hmm. And they have raised beds in the front yard. They have hanging baskets. I've never seen anything grow there. And it looks kind of deserted, but there is something about that that makes me think of something mystical, something magical about it.
Right.
And there's a car rotting in the front. It's a very nice neighborhood.
Oh, car collectors.
I wanted to picture that part.
It's not in the yard. The car is not in the yard. It's on the road. But on the other side of the sidewalk, but you know, you just it's just one of those things where it's so out of place, but it makes you think and it makes you wonder. And I love those things that spark the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get that on a computer.
Right.
No,
you just can't
get that there. And the computer is so flat and dull and finite. It's like, just okay, you got the credit, now move on, and who cares what the heck you learned?
Right,
well, it's competing with, you know, YouTube and TikTok and Twitter and stuff. So to be on the computer and not clickety-click elsewhere, right, and go down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then there's the big question of you're assuming that everyone has strong technology skills and is, like, very computer literate and has access. So you're assuming
access
all that
to, yeah.
is in place, and you're also assuming that the instruction important. Is like the teacher is teaching it well and not just like, because teaching in front of a class is, as we've learned now, is very different than teaching in front of a computer. And not so you're assuming all those are in place even before the kid has done 1 second of the curriculum. So those are some big assumptions in this day and age that
mm-hmm.
And you're assuming they're fluent in English because there is not a ton of this curriculum that is translated into other languages.
Well, actually, the computer does have different languages. And so I have one student who uses it and it translates everything. So he's doing everything in Spanish.
Oh, but it's not the curriculum, right? Like your laptop is converting it, right?
No, the program, the platform actually has it in several other languages.
That's good, because it's not the case for all of them.
And somebody said, you can't do that because he has to learn the English. And I don't really care what language. I mean, if he can learn it in his own language, he needs to be literate in his first language before he can assume the literacy of a second language.
That's a different class. Like, to understand, you know.
Right. Right. But
trying to think of an example.
But there's also, the thing is that, you know, there was a platform called Plato, and it was around in the 90s, in the 1990s. And I remember going to a conference and sitting, Autumn's back, and sitting with the rep from Plato, and we just had a great old time. And I kept thinking, this sounds really kind of awesome that the kids can do this. But I hadn't really thought of the implications and the repercussions of having that. But given that, that it was something that was used in addition to, and it wasn't the primary, it wasn't the primary platform.
It was supplemental.
It was supplemental. Mm-hmm. And if it was there 25 years ago, don't you think that the platforms would have come up with some way to blow people's heads off that would be more interactive? Sure, they have labs for the sciences, mm-hmm. but they're not, it doesn't really work that well. And if it's only for the sciences, why can't you do it for any other subject?
And then there's that whole, I was just thinking when you were talking about that, about the different subjects, you know, most people's first thoughts go to, I'm going to teach you your English class. I'm going to teach you your math. I'm going to try and teach you science and history. But there is so much more for that we want our students to learn that doesn't come across through a computer program. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like, you know, the alt-ed school that we have in our district down the street, like they have that whole culinary program. That would be extremely difficult to replicate, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can watch the Food Network. I'm watching the Halloween, you know, cake bake off. You know, those are super exciting, but like, I can't do that in my kitchen, right? But at the program or auto, we have a great auto program. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that's extremely difficult. All those hands-on, get your hands into it and manipulate the materials. And I would even think like science would be so hard because like, where's the dissection and where's the, like the,
right.
the Bunsen burners and all that hand, because I'm such a visual hands-on learner that mm-hmm. you have to watch it from a screen.
Listen, I would be out. You had to, if you're in the air and you're the only person with dexterity enough to grab the controls in the cockpit and land the aircraft, give me a computer class anytime. I'll listen to the person talking every time. But if, you know, after that I land the plane, I'm going to like exhale and cry, you know, that we all are safe and go, thank you. And after that, I will never remember again how to land the plane. And that's what it's, in my opinion, that's what it's good for. The knowledge retainment is like moments after the test, unless you're uh-huh. into it. And then if you're inspired, don't go looking anymore in that computer program, because that was the last chapter and we're moving on now. And this is the next chapter. And who the heck cares whether you thought that was cool? We're moving uh-huh. on.
Unless you have a cumulative test, and the cumulative test, you have to remember everything, which means that you've taken yeah. notes on everything. And our kids are not huge note takers. I mean, they,
oh, and they don't do that. Yeah.
Right. Because a lot of our kids, they never learned that. And to try to teach them while they're working on the computer, mm-hmm. They don't jibe. They don't right. jibe.
Or they don't save them. In the one program we're using, they had the one sidebar where you could save them on the computer or they could save them on paper. And of course they hate writing. Why would mm-hmm. they do that? So they didn't save them on the computer either. If they did, they were primitive.
Right.
Or they just lose them. And I'm like, you can't remember all that.
Well, I took the quiz and I passed, so I threw them away. Well, you have a bigger test. Well, you didn't tell me that. Yeah. Well, yeah, I did, but, you know. So the interesting thing is that the majority of our students, when given a choice of paper, pencil, or computer platform, chose paper, pencil. And some chose a combination of the two. Mm-hmm. They're looking at, there's the online curriculum that we had developed, and some students want to do that. It's kind of interactive with videos and whatnot, but they still have to do some retention. They have to do explanations of, it's not just spitting back. It's not a chew and barf. It's a, I'm going to chew it. It's a chew and digest, and that, no, the end result of that isn't that much better. But they, yeah, they need to digest it, and they need to be able to use it. So kind of like some, like an animal that would spin it into a glorious cocoon or something.
Right.
It's cursorless.
And then you have something that you can discuss, and so you can see what they're saying, and then you can go over it, and You can perform remediation, you can reteach, you can do all kinds of things with that. And then they have to redo it and they get the learning that way. And then it's a process. And so, and it's not this instant gratification of you find out if you're right or wrong. It's a process. Yeah. And it's, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing that a computer program will not give you is a mentorship. You know, that sly little knowledge that you have of the student. Go, do you remember that thing we talked about 2 weeks ago? When you, oh, yeah, remember that? Oh, yeah, now's the time to use that piece of punctuation. Mm-hmm. Here comes your semicolon. Right. Oh, now? Yeah, now. The computer program will never say that. It'll just go, semicolon, colon, period, or question mark, you know. But with us, it's like, you and I talked about this, right? And that is mentoring a student, and they don't do that at all.
Right. And but one of the things,
the relationship piece is missing.
Exactly. There is no, well, it's the relationship of the person and the computer. And we really don't want our kids to be living in grandma's basement for the rest of their life, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you like want them to contribute to society and be a functioning member, and you're contributing and you're employed and you're doing something that fulfills you.
Right. And an interesting person, which is why you learn some of these things, because it gives you a backdrop of something else that might happen further along the line. And it helps you think critically. And I'm not sure that mechanical thinking is up to par with critical thinking.
No, it's not at all.
Right. And all those 21st century skills that we were talking about a few episodes back, I struggle to think of which ones you're going to meet in computer programs.
Right. Because there's because it's pretty much set and stayed.
Yeah.
And it's not nuanced, and life is nuanced, and learning is very nuanced.
Right.
Because, I mean, I've had students who would have done terribly on the computer, and yet these were students who were avid Shakespeare learners. They begged me to teach them Shakespeare. And some of my students, who most people thought were lower level learners, they were the ones who caught on to Shakespeare the fastest. Right. And because they didn't complicate it. And they loved it. And so I would say, okay, what's going on in this scene? And I remember this one kid, and everybody said they just kind of looked at him and they were kind of giggling because they thought, yeah, right. Like, he's really going to get it. And he came out and he was quite astute. And,
I know that was exciting, wasn't it, honey?
And he just came out and he said it, and everybody just kind of looked at him. And then they looked at me and I said, you're right on. That's exactly what it is. And so we did Shakespeare that way. And so he became the expert. And it's really amazing, because they're bringing back the community again. It's really amazing how, when people are in a community, how they rally behind each other and how they learn from each other. Even if they have great anxiety, eventually there's a little spark or a little bird that lands and kind of kisses them and gives them this magic power. So, and you don't get that from the computer. Right. Like I said, segregation and isolation.
Yeah.
Is that a good place to, like,
segregation, isolation, yeah.
To wrap up, that was kind of like a nice finale.
Makes for bad team members.
Well, thank you. I think that's a great place for us to wrap up. And
kind of said it all.
I think we did. Thank you very much, both of you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
And
both
so,
of you back.
And to everybody who's listening, please comment, subscribe, and we will see you on our next episode. So until then, adios.